Thank you very much, and I hope everyone's doing well this evening. First, I'd like to thank Towson University and tonight's sponsors for hosting this event. Madam President, thank you very much, and I appreciate your leadership here at Towson, one of our jewels in our university system, one of the top value schools in its category across the nation, and you all just do an outstanding work. I always wanted to be able to perform in an arena. I was hoping maybe when I was a young boy that I'd grow up and be a basketball star. That didn't work out, but it's really great to be here this evening with each and every one of you, certainly with the members of the panel. You know, 30 years ago, when I graduated college, I received a commission in the United States Army. I flew helicopters with the 4th Combat Aviation Brigade, 3rd Infantry Division. It was one of the best jobs that I ever had. I had an opportunity to serve with and lead some of the most patriotic men and women who I've ever met from all four corners of this country, from urban communities and rural communities and different faiths and ethnicities and nationalities and backgrounds. But we were connected by a common bond, and that was our profound love for this country. We were American soldiers. 19 years later, I got a set of orders to go to Iraq, as Bob mentioned in the introduction. It was a tough set of orders to handle. I had young kids, a 9-year-old daughter, my son Jonathan, just shy of his 4th birthday. And one of the most difficult evenings of my life was explaining to my kids that their dad was going to spend a year with the Army in the desert. So I promised them I'd be home by Jonathan's 5th birthday. And because of the courage and the professionalism of the soldiers in the 3rd Infantry Division with whom I was stationed in Baghdad, I made it home to my family and this country and state that we all love. And when I got back, people asked me, what did you learn when you were in Iraq? So I learned a number of lessons, one of which is that no matter where you find people, Baghdad, Baltimore, anywhere in Maryland, this country, where my father was raised out of poverty in Kingston, Jamaica, families want the same things for themselves and their children. Opportunities made possible by good education, to raise your family in a safe neighborhood with great schools, a clean environment. And we all want to live in a society that is just, with a justice system that is fair. And that's what we fight for every day here in Maryland, and that's why I'm proud to serve as your Lieutenant Governor. Together, we have built the best in the nation public schools. We all recognize that we still have work to do because today, not every child gets that world-class K-12 education. We lead the nation in college affordability. We went from one of the most expensive to one of the least expensive public university college systems in the nation. We've driven crime down to 30-year lows, while at the same time, we've reduced our inmate population and recidivism has gone, that's that revolving door in the criminal justice system, has gone from closer to 50% to closer to 40%. One of only a handful of states that has a AAA bond rating coming out of the recession, that's what enables us to invest in facilities on our college campuses. That's what enables us to invest in roads and bridges and rails and affordable housing. This is a great state, but it's great because of each and every one of you and what we do together. Our work is not complete. There are many things that we have not yet completed for Marylanders. I'm running for governor. I'll ask for your support because I believe that together we can build a better Maryland for more Marylanders. And I really appreciate the opportunity this evening to be able to address some of the concerns and questions that will be raised.
Thank you, Governor. For those of you in the audience and for the governor, we have a timer for these two-minute sections. It's being run by Francis Smythe, who's the owner of Century Engineering. He's unbiased, but we don't know if he can work the timer real well. He is going to hold up. You want to show them the sign, Francis? In 10 seconds, 30 seconds, so you'll know when the time will run out. First question will come from Don Fry from the Greater Baltimore Committee.
Governor, good evening. Maryland's post-recession economic growth and job creation has been described by some as sluggish. Despite the considerable strengths that Maryland has as a place to locate a business, private sector leaders point to our state's tax policies as a major reason for our low business climate, rankings, and reputation. Specifically, how would you, as governor, work to reform Maryland's tax policies to make Maryland more competitive?
Right. Let's just sort of set the table on our economic growth. The nation's recovery has been sluggish. Maryland's has been not as robust as we'd like. Nevertheless, our rate of job growth since the recession has exceeded every state in the mid-Atlantic and even exceeded Virginia. Our unemployment is a full 10% below the national average. But that's not good enough because there are still Marylanders that don't have full employment. There are still Marylanders who face foreclosure. There are still businesses that are wrestling with and, you know, overcoming the Great Recession. There's been a debate over the past several years whether Maryland's business climate is competitive or hostile to businesses. My running mate Ken Ullman and I choose not to enter the debate, who's right and who's wrong, but to ask the business community in compact, much like the Greater Baltimore Committee suggested last summer, the business community and the public sector together in partnership strengthen Maryland's business business climate so that we will attract and retain more businesses in Maryland, because we've got to grow the economy, create jobs, develop the most competitive workforce, and develop Maryland's business community. When I talk to business leaders around the state, there are a number of things they point to. Say, what about regulations and licensing? It's a burden. No one would suggest that we shouldn't protect the environment and consumers and workers, but we can work with the private sector to make compliance with those liability. Now, there's some on this campaign trail that would say, let's roll back the corporate income tax from 8.5 to 6%. If we do, and I have not heard the answer to how you do it, we're going to have to cut higher education, because a percentage of that tax is dedicated to higher education. We're going to have to cut investments in transportation, because a portion of that is invested in transportation infrastructure. We're going to have to forego our goal of expanding universal pre-K. Ask a college professor the five things they need to ensure successful college completion. They'll include universal pre-K, early childhood education. We need to have a balanced, fair code, gives relief to working families, that incentivizes employers to invest in our economy, but yet enables us to support the programs that Marylanders deserve and demand. Is that a buzzer?
Yeah, that was your time.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
You stand up. No, I'll be better than that. There's no zero sign, right?
Raven Francis, there's no zero.
Okay.
Okay, next question. Sam DePaola from SunTrust Bank.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, great to see you. The growth and retention of human capital is an important part of many economic development strategies around the state. How would you incorporate workforce development and college graduate retention into your statewide development strategy?
Excuse me. Could you repeat that? Get a little closer to the mic. Some of the people couldn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The growth and retention of human capital is an important part of many new economic development strategies around the state. How would you incorporate workforce development and college graduate retention into your statewide development strategy? Would you also support legislation that funds internships at Maryland technology companies for students at Maryland colleges and universities?
Yes. Where are my students in the audience? Okay, now, your attendance here at Towson, I know some of you are at CCBC. The state's investing in your education, so we need you to stay in Maryland so we can get a return on that investment. You see, Maryland imports much too much talent. 60% of our educators we import. 85% of our degreed construction workers we import. We need to ensure that higher education is producing that workforce and keeping the pipeline going. When we think about how we're going to grow the economy, when I think about my plan for economic growth and development, higher education is essential. Maryland's is an innovation economy. A lot of states like to claim that, but the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has ranked Maryland's economy number one for innovation and entrepreneurship. And that's not just in industries like cybersecurity or in the life sciences. That's innovation that drives agriculture. It's innovation that actually drives the hospitality industry. It's innovation that is throughout all of the industries in Maryland. And how do we ensure that we're going to keep that pipeline of innovation and entrepreneurship? It's through higher education. And that's why over the last 8 years, I've supported things like the Maryland Innovation Center, where we are encouraging and we provide assistance to transferring some of that research and that occurs on our campuses, transfer that technology into the market. That's why I supported, and I think most of the college professors did, our RISE initiative this year, the Regional Institution Strategic Enterprise Zones, where colleges can partner with communities and business to create enterprise zones right here in the community to create jobs. Our competitive advantage in Maryland are our fine universities and colleges. My economic plan relies heavily on investments in higher education so that we can deliver the education and the skills for Marylanders to compete in the jobs that we create in the years ahead.
Good. Thank you. Scott Dorsey, Merritt Properties.
Hey. This is about the fiscal challenges facing our state government. For more than a decade, Maryland has addressed its stubborn structural deficit by borrowing special funds that are intended for other uses such as transportation and open space to shift to the general fund, and by converting operating expenses to long-term bond debt. Is this a practice that you would continue? If not specifically, how would you address what has become the state's perennial structural deficit?
Yeah, absolutely not. I'm going to have to get a lot in here in this 2 minutes. We have a structural deficit because several years ago we made a commitment to K through 12 education, and at the same time we reduced our personal income tax by 10%. 7 years ago, we reformed our tax code. We were on path to eliminate that structural deficit, and then we came headwind with an economic recession. During that recession, we were forced to do a lot of things that we wouldn't normally do in a budget. Think about your household budget. You've got a savings for your kids' education. You've got your 401k or other retirement savings. You've got an account for your transportation, your car and your gas and your scheduled and unscheduled automobile maintenance. You've got all sorts of budgets, and you're disciplined, and you adhere to those budgets. In this economic recession, state government, much like families living in this state, sort of that stuff went out the window. Families borrowed from their 401k. They bought to send their kids to college. They borrowed from their car fund in order to pay unexpected repairs when the heating and ventilation system went out. We are beyond the recession, and we need to get back to normal budgeting. We should not be dipping into the pension system to fund our ongoing operating expenses. We should not be dipping into the Transportation Trust Fund. But as a point of clarification, every dollar that's been diverted out of the Transportation Trust Fund is either in or there's a plan for it to go back in, with the exception of highway user revenues for counties and municipalities. But we have a AAA bond rating, one of only a handful of states in Maryland. And if you look at the rating agencies that rate Maryland's AAA bond rating, even when the federal government was downgraded, and we talk about the reliance of our economy with the federal government, even when it was downgraded, we maintained a AAA bond rating. Why? The rating agency said sound fiscal management and a diverse economy.
Good. Thank you.
I want to use that 10. That 10 minutes goes to the last question.
Next question, Jerry Witt, Maryland Business for Responsible Government.
This is again about Maryland and its business climate. And Maryland generally in the past hasn't had to work very hard to attract businesses because businesses came here because of the proximity to Washington, D.C. That's all changed now because Washington is not spending money like it used to with budget constraints. What three things would you do in your first year as governor to improve Maryland's very low business climate ranking to some higher number like Virginia or North Carolina's number 5 business-friendly ranking?
Sure. Oh, sorry. Back in October, and if you go to anthonybrown.com, you'll see, we rolled out our competitive business climate framework. And in that framework, we answer your question. Because we say the first thing that we're going to do in a Brown-Ullman administration, it's never been done, certainly in the 22 years I've been in Maryland, is we are going to establish as the number one strategic goal in the Brown-Ullman administration to position Maryland's business climate to be number one in the nation. Think of your own organization. I look at what we do in state government, where we have a number of strategic goals. We have metrics that are designed to drive those goals, and we achieve them. We don't have as a goal in state government to develop a competitive business climate. There are a lot of things that we do to support it, but we haven't focused our efforts. So the first thing you do is you've got to declare it as a goal. Now, there are a lot of metrics that drive that. One of them, we've talked a little bit about, and it's a high priority for me, investments in infrastructure. When we invest in infrastructure, those are investments that pay for themselves. They put Marylanders back to work. They support growing economies and expanding communities. We invested $140 million to expand the capacity at the Port of Baltimore. We did it, by the way, as a public-private partnership, which I've been championing. As a result, we created 5,000 jobs, and you will recall, at the end of last year, Amazon announced that it's going to establish a fulfillment center, 1,600 jobs at the Port of Baltimore. Infrastructure investments attract business to a state. And number three, we've talked a lot about it, it's workforce development. I've got a proposal, anthonybrown.com, for more career technology education in our schools, not just colleges and universities, in our high schools and middle schools so that we can prepare our students to fill those jobs so that when companies look at Maryland, they say, they've got the workforce that we need. We're staying or we're coming to Maryland.
Good. Thank you. Dr. Leske?
Yes. If we may return to higher education for a moment. For the past 8 years, Maryland's higher education system has received increased investment from the governor and the General Assembly, and all of this during a time when states were exercising massive fiscal restraints on public higher education and dramatic tuition increases. Maryland continued to provide financial support to our institutions. So our question to you, Lieutenant Governor, is what would you do to further enhance the quality of higher education while balancing the accessibility and affordability issues that we care about as well?
The first thing I'm going to do is convene a group of college presidents who have certainly clear ideas and a whole lot more experience to be able to work with me as I convene that group to determine what exactly we'll do. But there are some thoughts I have. One is we continue to make investments in the quality facilities that we have around the state of Maryland. I can't think of a single campus, college or university campus, four-year degree-awarding institution, or community college that has not benefited from investments in college facilities. And whether it's performing arts centers, whether it's engineering buildings, and when you invest in facilities, you attract the very best, and not to say that we don't have high-quality faculty, but you attract the very best faculty and the very best students. Often the very best faculty that in turn can attract a lot of grant dollars because of the work that they do. And those grant dollars can be used to improve the quality of programming, the instruction, the research that's happening both at the graduate and at the undergraduate level. The other thing that I am committed to, and we've sort of laid the seeds for this, is the longitudinal data tracking that we do of our students. We received a Race to the Top grant of a $250 million for longitudinal data tracking in our K through 12 program. We need to be able to track our students not only K through 12, but into higher education so that we can make sure we're not double educating students because we're educating them in math and reading in high school only to find out that when they go to college, you're duplicating the effort and having to reteach them reading and math. That's not quality. It's not cost-effective, and it's avoidable. So we've put in place longitudinal data tracking of students. So those are some of the ideas that I have in how we can improve quality in delivering this world-class education at our public universities and colleges.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, 2 minutes for your closing remarks, Lieutenant Governor.
2 minutes? I could have used those 2 minutes on some of the questions. Listen, it's been a privilege for the last 8 years to serve as your lieutenant governor. I never would have thought growing up that I'd have the opportunity to serve people the way that I do. I was raised in a family where my father taught the lesson of service. My father was raised in poverty in Kingston, Jamaica. His mother brought him to this country when he was a little older than my son Jonathan is today. And he was a doctor, and he saw patients and treated people in some of the poorest hospitals and neighborhoods near where I grew up. And he always taught the lesson of service. I knew I wanted to be just like my father, and I wanted to serve other people. Didn't go to medical school, went to law school, but I've had an opportunity over the course of my life, first in the military, later in the House of Delegates, and today to serve you as your lieutenant governor. And what's great brought some of the greatest satisfaction to the work that I've been able to do is the difference that we make in the lives of so many of our neighbors, reducing domestic violence against women, the work we've done to place 2,000 children out of foster care and into permanent loving homes as we're building strong communities on the foundation of strong families. And I leave you with that one only because regardless of the economic prosperity that we can create and the business climate that we'll generate, if we don't have strong communities built on the foundation of strong families, then we're not going to live in a Maryland that is better and better for more Marylanders. And that's my commitment to creating opportunities, to creating ladders of opportunity so that every Marylander, regardless of where you live, can not only contribute to the greatness that is Maryland, but to participate and benefit from the greatness that is our state. So thanks for what you do, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to come by this evening to share some thoughts and answer a few questions.